This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this U.S. politics edition of the program, Democrats pick up two Senate seats, effectively giving them control of the upper chamber of Congress. The U.S. Congress certifies Democrat Joe Biden's win in the November presidential election after supporters of U.S. President Donald Trump stormed the Capitol building in a violent attempt to derail the process. Members of both political parties condemned the attack on the symbol of the nation's democracy, which resulted in at least five deaths, scores of injured, and the destruction of federal property. Top Democrats have called for President Trump's removal from power via the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, which lays out the details of presidential succession, or through a second impeachment process for having spurred his supporters to aggressively contest his electoral loss. This is Speaker of the House of Representatives Nancy Pelosi denouncing President Trump's actions in a televised address on Thursday, January 7.
In calling for this seditious act, the president has committed an unspeakable assault on our nation and our people. I join the Senate Democratic leader in calling on the vice president to remove this president by immediately invoking the 25th Amendment. If the vice president and cabinet do not act, the Congress may be prepared to move forward with impeachment.
Several Trump administration officials have resigned over the violence at the Capitol, including Elaine Chao, the transportation secretary, and Betsy DeVos, the education secretary. Well, for more on the ramifications of these and other critical issues at this time of political transition, we turn to our veteran analysts. John Fortier, formerly director of governmental studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, now resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, that's a prominent conservative think tank here in Washington, and Jim Kessler, executive vice president for policy at Third Way, that's a center-left policy group also based in Washington. And both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
And John, let me begin with you. I'd like to get your reaction to the violent assault on the Capitol, just as the joint session of Congress was doing what is normally considered a ceremonial count of the Electoral College votes, certified already by states which administer our national elections. What's your reaction?
Well, this is one of the most terrible, horrible days in Washington in recent memory. Any sort of violence is always to be condemned, but to add to it that it was directed at the Capitol, that people made it into the Capitol during a part of the end of the vote counting process through the Electoral College was just one of the worst things one could imagine. It also was precipitated by some terrible actions by Donald Trump in the days in December and January relating to extending the dispute over the election. Early on, of course, people have the right to challenge results in court, but one of the more egregious instances of the president pushing, for example, the Secretary of State of Georgia to change the election results. So a terrible set of circumstances, one that has very badly damaged Donald Trump and essentially sidelined him and changed the discourse, very badly damaged the Republican Party. And obviously, we knew we were going to have a Joe Biden presidency beginning January 20th. That still is the case. The Georgia races you mentioned, also Democrats with that will have, you know, a majority, a slim majority, but still a majority in the Senate going forward. And, you know, it's a very difficult time for the Republican Party. Certainly, Donald Trump has lost a lot of stature in the party, in the country, and his future is in grave doubt. But it was a terrible day that we hope to never see repeated.
Over to you, Jim Kessler. Following on what John said, even after the violence on January 6th, a handful of Republican senators led by Josh Hawley of Missouri and Ted Cruz of Texas and more than 100 Republican members of the House of Representatives still objected to the electoral count in an apparent effort to placate President Trump and his supporters. Now, of course, they didn't succeed, as we said, and as John said, the count was certified by the Congress and Joe Biden will be inaugurated on January 20. Nonetheless, what's your take on all of this?
Well, the actions on the day where the electoral vote were to be counted were disgraceful. Everyone is responsible for their own behavior, but the most responsibility belongs to Donald Trump. His actions since the election and claiming that the election was stolen is just a bold-faced lie. It's completely reprehensible. It is counter to what this country is all about. But nothing about Donald Trump surprises me. I guess I'm still continued to be surprised that so many Republican legislators who know better enable President Trump and continue down this folly, this perpetuating this lie. You talked about Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Josh Hawley, who were the lead, at least in the Senate, of challenging the Electoral College vote. I mean, look, I think that this is a combination of their own personal ambition, what they think will play in the future to a Republican voter who in some ways has been brainwashed by far right media and Donald Trump, and with a dose of cowardice because they're afraid of a negative tweet from Donald Trump. And if you put together ambition and cowardice together and politicians in power, that's a very dangerous chemical reaction that can occur. And we just saw the worst of America this week.
Turning back to you, John Forty, now there's talk of punishment for what President Trump did. Many have criticized on both sides of the aisle his rhetoric, which incited the supporters to assault the Capitol. There's talk of impeachment in the 25th Amendment. Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senator Chuck Schumer said that Democrats now are prepared to impeach Trump for a second time. But many say that with less than 2 weeks until the end of the president's term, it's unclear whether Democrats could move quickly enough to do so. But they want to signal that this is wrong. Now, of course, we want to mention that there are many Republicans, or at least several. Adam Kinzinger, a representative from Illinois, a Republican, has been very outspoken against the president, what he has done. And even the National Association of Manufacturers, which is a conservative business group, have called for invoking the 25th Amendment. What's your take on these measures and whether or not they're even viable?
Look, the ground really shifted in dramatic ways after the incident in the Capitol, and the ground, especially for the support of Donald Trump. And Democrats were, of course, against Donald Trump, and even more so. But many, many Republicans came out pretty strongly against Donald Trump. We've had resignations in the cabinet, resignations in the White House. We certainly had some change in the way that electoral count vote went, with a number of Republicans backing down from their previous intention to object. So I think there's been some significant sea change. I think things are changing quickly, so it's a little hard to tell. But my sense is that we're not going to see the use of the 25th Amendment. I guess probably my constitutional sense says if you want to remove the president, impeachment is probably a stronger, more clear way to go. Just signals the more direct type of thing that you want to do, remove a president for certain abuses. But I also think, even though the ground has shifted very significantly, that, you know, it's a mix of how it shifted on the Republican side. Many are not supportive of the president, but are also probably not supportive of going forward and removing the president when there's not much time left. I suspect that it could happen somewhat quickly, impeachment and removal, but it does take some time. Democrats, if they see now the 25th Amendment is probably not going to be invoked by the vice president, I believe are probably going to push forward with some impeachment attempt. And that might not take that long, but still will get us into next week. I guess I think at the end of the day, Republicans as a whole, or the number that would be required to do this, look like they're going to say, look, this might just add to the wounds. We're happy to let the term run out. We're not so happy with Donald Trump, but that not removing him in the last days looks like my sense of what is likely to happen. My sense is we'll probably see some movement on the Democratic side towards impeachment, but the term will run out with Donald Trump in a much worse position and many Republicans very unhappy with him.
Turning back to you, Jim Kessler, what do you make of the talk of impeachment? Is this more of an attempt to placate the Democratic base? Certainly, it's very serious because Democrats and Republicans are extremely upset. Where do you think this is going?
What I would like to see is articles of impeachment from the House that is deeply bipartisan. It is time for Republicans in the House and in the Congress to finally stand up. Enough is enough. Look, there's 12 days left in this administration. I think he'll succeed and be able to run out the clock. But there has to be some bipartisan signal in this country that the president's behavior is not acceptable. Look, on this show a few months ago, I said he is going to say the election is stolen from him because he basically announced it at the Republican convention. Nobody should be surprised about this, but it is time for, this is a time for choosing. And I'm not talking about impeachment because it's like the likelihood of removing him. I just think it's a, you know, there, like I said, there's only 12 days left, but it's time for Republicans to stand with the nation and not stand with him.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, formerly Director of Governance Studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, now resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard, co-founder and Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. They joined me via Microsoft Teams, and we are discussing the transition of power in Washington as the incoming Biden administration is set to control the executive and legislative levers of power as of January 20. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal Twitter follower, Mohammed Awal Inusa from Accra, Ghana. As always, if you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. And tune in this weekend to our sister show, Press Conference USA. I talk with political scientist Frances E. Lee, who discusses her new book, The Limits of Party, Congress and Lawmaking in a Polarized Era. Lee tells VOA that divided government, that is, when one political party holds the executive branch and the other controls one or both chambers of Congress, can produce meaningful bipartisan legislation. Professor Lee also reacts to the Democrats' narrow control of both the Senate and the House of Representatives and what it means for President-elect Joe Biden's legislative agenda. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. And now back to Encounter with our political gurus, Jim Kessler and John Fortier. Well, back to you, John Fortier. And let's talk about the incoming administration, as well as those Senate races in Georgia, which turned out to be a boon for the Democrats, a narrow win for Raphael Warnock, the first Black senator from Georgia. And then a young Jewish fellow, John Ossoff, won his race to many people's surprise. What do you make of the new dynamic in the Senate, and what will it give the Biden administration, any kind of advantages?
Well, this was obviously very good news for Democrats. And look, I think there were a lot of reasons why those races went the way they did. One of them was because I think we were still fighting the 2020 election and people were still voting against Donald Trump. Often, and we may see this with the Biden administration, when a new administration comes in power, that administration doesn't do as well in midterm elections and runoffs. And this was clearly still the atmosphere of the 2020 election, with Democrats coming out very strongly. Other reasons too, changes in Georgia, strong Black support, but certainly I think that the fact that it was seen as a continuation of the election was a good reason for Democrats winning, and they did very well. As for the effects of this, I guess I would think of three scenarios. The pre-election scenario for Democrats was one of extreme exuberance, where they would have a good-sized majority in the Senate, a bigger majority in the House, and a Biden presidency there. There was potential for a very aggressive agenda on all sorts of fronts to really get done. When they looked like they weren't going to have the Senate, it looked like it was going to be, you know, tough to do anything legislatively. Yes, Biden would be president. That's important. But what would get through Congress would be less. This is a very narrow majority in the Senate, 50-50, breaking the tie. It's a narrow majority in the House, and yet it is still a majority. And so there are certainly things that the Democrats can do using the budget process, essentially, and doing things which I think will be some of the earliest things related to COVID relief and economic relief, being able to roll back some of Donald Trump's regulations, the last part of the administration's regulations, using some congressional procedures, and also on their nominations for cabinet positions or for some judges, they'll have a majority. Now, holding that 50-50 majority together and holding one senator from defecting is very difficult. And also, I don't believe that it's very likely that they're going to move against the filibuster, which was a thought early on, which would allow them to do many more things by a majority vote rather than by a 60-vote margin. And so, look, it's very good news for Democrats. They'll be able to do more. And with a new start and a new president and some momentum, they'll certainly have off the bat the ability to do some things that they would not have been able to do had the election gone the other way.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, your reaction to those Senate races in Georgia and the fact that the president-elect will probably be able to push through key parts of his agenda and certainly win confirmation of his cabinet selections as a result of this new 50-50 split, which if there is a tie, it could be broken by, of course, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris.
I agree with all of John's analysis on the Georgia election. I'll just add one other thing. There is a civil war breaking out within the Republican Party, and ground zero of that civil war was Georgia. The president was chastising the governor of Georgia and the Georgia Secretary of State for their certification of Joe Biden's narrow victory there in November. And that definitely played into this election. And I don't think Democrats would have won had it not been for Donald Trump's behavior. Moving on to Joe Biden, what this means for Biden, this is a sea change. Like John said, it is a very narrow majority. The House majority for Democrats is the narrowest Democratic majority in the House since 1918. And the Senate majority is the narrowest majority possible. So it still means that nearly everything that gets done has to be done through the center ideologically. The Democratic caucus runs from the very far left in the Senate, Bernie Sanders, to someone who is arguably center-right, Joe Manchin of West Virginia. So I don't think this is a progressive wish list that you're going to see happening, but it does allow Biden to do a pretty aggressive agenda that reaches towards the center. And the main difference of this Georgia win is it allows Chuck Schumer, who is a Democrat and is now the new majority leader, it allows him to control the floor and the calendar rather than Mitch McConnell, a Republican who has been doing it for a long time, so that Joe Biden doesn't need essentially Mitch McConnell's permission to bring legislation to the floor. In some cases, as John pointed out, you just need a 51 vote margin using budget procedures, but a lot of times you're still going to need 60 votes as well.
Let's remind our listeners that you, Jim Kessler, used to work for Chuck Schumer, Senator Schumer, back in the day. And of course, he's probably extremely delighted about becoming majority leader. And as you said, that will enable him to set the agenda as well and help push through President-elect Biden's priorities, at least partially. Back to you, John Forte. I want to pick up on something that Jim Kessler said about a so-called civil war within the Republican Party. I'd like you to pick up on that and talk about what we're witnessing within the GOP, the grand old party, the Republican Party, given the rifts. What do you make of this, and what does it say about going forward for the party, what it stands for?
Well, first, just I think we should note in American politics generally, when a party loses the presidency, it is somewhat leaderless. We don't have an opposition leader, and there's often many voices in the party and really not a full voice for the Republican Party until they nominate somebody in 2024 for the presidency. There was always the question of Donald Trump and what his role would be. I do think that's going to be greatly diminished. I don't rule out that he's going to want to play a role and maybe try to get back into the politics, but it's going to be much harder. And I think the calculation for him and for voters will be much harder for him. I'm not sure if I think that Trumpism is going to disappear, or at least major parts of the way in which the Republican Party has shifted on issues towards more white working class issues. That's certainly was pushed forward by Donald Trump, but it even preceded Donald Trump, where the party was getting more and more votes from parts of the country that were industrial and, again, white working class, non-college educated whites. And so I think, you know, someone will take up that mantle, but partly because of the horrible events in the Capitol, you know, Donald Trump's ability to lead that might be certainly not as great and might not happen at all. And that would leave it more open. So I don't think we're going to see a return to, you know, sort of more or left-wing or country club Republicanism, as some would call it, or even overly establishment Republicanism. But the field is wide open. And I think there'll be some strands of Trumpism put in with different people in a different way. And there will be some fighting in the party. But there will also be a long time of leaderlessness until we really have that fight in the nomination process for president in 2024.
Jim Kessler, on our last program, both of you talked about some Republican moderates like Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Mitt Romney, of course, Utah, that they would potentially be voting on some issues with Democrats in the Senate. How do you see that possibility now?
That is going to be really interesting to watch going forward. I know Biden is going to try and reach out to mainstream Republicans, both in the House and the Senate, but particularly in the Senate. Now that Democrats have control of the floor, Schumer is in charge, there is certain legislation where you do not necessarily need any Republican support to win. So it is the necessity of having Republicans on your side in certain cases lessens. But I do think there's going to be a concerted effort. And I believe that there is a group of Republicans who actually want to see a successful Biden presidency rather than risking a return of Trump or Trumpism, that they're that concerned of what is going on. So this could be an interesting dynamic going forward in the next 2 years. I think Joe Biden is the right president to lead an effort that is reaching out to Republicans. You know, we'll see how the rest of congressional Democrats feel about it, but I think that that's a goal for Biden.
So back to you, John Fortier. I do want to make a statement about the composition of the House of Representatives. The Democrats did lose seats, and as Jim Kessler said, they have a very slim majority, but they are still in the majority. But I think we should tip our hats to Republicans, and particularly women. There are a lot of female Republicans who won seats. And some say that these women, you know, they may have a lot in common, you know, with other Democratic women, you know, centrist women. So it'll be interesting to see that dynamic. But let me ask you how you see the agenda going forward, you know, the legislative agenda for the 117th Congress.
Well, look, I think Democrats have an ambitious agenda that they'd like to take up. But, you know, we shouldn't forget that the main activity that is going on in this country really is still to deal with the pandemic and COVID and the economic consequences of that. And I do think that likely partly because of the Senate rules, which allow things to be done by majority vote on things related to budget matters in certain ways, that we are likely to see some sort of relief package that is both addressed to dealing with COVID and dealing with the economy. And I think that's the most likely first vehicle that would get through. Now, Democrats have all sorts of other priorities, but some of those are more difficult in their own caucus, and some of them require 60 votes. And I'm not saying that there can't be compromises made and maybe more modest versions of those done. But I do think the first thing is going to be to turn to the COVID-19 crisis, both dealing with it itself and dealing with the economic consequences. And that's where I expect the Biden administration to begin.
You get the last word, Jim Kessler. Epidemiologists and public health experts have criticized the Trump administration for the slow rollout of vaccine distribution. They have certainly praised the Trump administration for Operation Warp Speed, which fast-tracked vaccine development. But there's been much criticism about the distribution of vaccines. And meantime, we've reached, that is the United States, a grim milestone of more than 4,000 deaths per day. So there's no question that COVID relief and mitigating the economic fallout will certainly be at the top of Joe Biden's agenda. So how do you think that's going to play out?
Yeah, that's for sure. Look, the Trump administration underestimated the impact of COVID-19, both in terms of health and the economy, from day one, referring to it as a cold and it will pass. And they've also underestimated the difficulty and the logistics required for getting the vaccine out. Basically, I'll just be charitable to them. Their philosophy on the pandemic and the vaccine has basically been, states, you figure it out, you do it. Clearly, you need a national strategy. The Biden administration is going to come in and really try and get this thing done and get it done right. And, you know, we're changing horses midstream. I have confidence that they'll make more of a concerted effort. And, you know, look, hopefully, you know, this will start moving forward and the vaccines will really move in earnest. But this slow start has been very disconcerting.
Gentlemen, that's about all the time we have on this edition. We look forward to seeing you very soon again. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, he's resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, as always, thanks for a terrific conversation.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.